Hello and welcome to The Blockchain and Us, where pioneers and thought leaders talk about their journey in blockchain technology, crypto assets, and the token economy. And I'm your host, Manuel Staggers. This episode has support from 8Grade, story-driven media. 8Grade is a media production company with a focus on telling engaging stories about new technologies and the future, with films, interviews, podcasts, and other media that make an impact. To learn more about story-driven media, visit 8gr8.com. My guest today is Nilu Ravai. Nilu is the head of education at BlockGeeks with the mission to share and grow knowledge around blockchain technology. Nilu is a filmmaker turned coder who screened her short film at the Cannes Film Festival and has helped fintech startups in Toronto and San Francisco scale into some of the biggest players in the space. She is heavily involved in the global blockchain community, working with emerging platforms and enterprises that want to leverage the technology. And she also works with various causes to design and implement socially impactful blockchain solutions. And now to the conversation with Nilu Ravai. Hi, Nilu, and many thanks for taking time today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Let's jump right in with your education activities at BlockGeeks. What are you teaching there about blockchain technology?
When we started out with BlockGeeks, we were mainly focused on developing engineering talent for blockchain development. So we were focused very heavily on development on the Ethereum platform, as well as development on private platforms like Hyperledger, the Hyperledger Fabric, Sawtooth, and these kind of different platforms. And we coupled this learning with information about how a blockchain works and some of the underlying principles of why the blockchain is the way that it is. So mainly things like crypto economics.
Mm-hmm. How do you present this kind of content to make it appealing?
We've noticed that in the way that we've presented this content, a lot of our students were asking for a much more guided and finite program. So the way that we had it, our programs originally structured, is that they were kind of like Coursera courses where you would basically go select a course that you're interested in, and we had some content developed around it, and you could watch that and follow the lessons, code along, and essentially gain your own skills for yourselves. But what we found is that people, especially a lot of our students who were just coming into this field without any kind of previous information or knowledge, what they needed more than just the information was a guided process where they were in touch with us a lot more frequently, they were having a personal experience, and that the courses and the content was designed in a way to guide them from not really knowing anything about blockchain to being able to have a portfolio and being able to become developers. So because of that, we started a series of accelerated programs. So our accelerated programs right now include the Ethereum accelerated program, which is basically a lot of our courses from the Ethereum program, but just redesigned, including assignments and just having a lot of high touch contact in the form of chat support and live classes to make sure that students are really feeling that community vibe and learning from each other and actually getting to a point where they're not just passively consuming content, but they're actively creating. And by the time they graduate from the program, which is about 5 weeks long, they're actually able to become smart contract and Ethereum developers. Mm-hmm. Outside of just Ethereum, we've also expanded to different kinds of blockchains, so including Hyperledger. We've also expanded to other fields within blockchain, so not just technical. So we're also launching an accelerator called Blockchain Law, which looks at the legal implications of blockchains for lawyers or operations managers who are interested in being involved with the regulatory side of blockchains and blockchain applications and cryptocurrencies. And we're also doing a blockchain for business accelerated program as well, which is more for business professionals and C-level executives who are interested in understanding how blockchain works. They don't want to be coders, but they still want to understand what the blockchain's about and which kinds of business needs require a blockchain and which don't. Because I found in my personal experience, this was one of the biggest questions, regardless of if someone was a coder, if someone was a business person or who they were, understanding when they needed to use a blockchain and when they didn't, or what kind of applications demanded a blockchain solution, was the biggest challenge. So our Blockchain for Business course is specifically tailored to answer this question. And so basically, when you graduate from this program, you'll see if someone has some sort of an ICO and they tell you that this is their business plan, you can basically look and see, does this solve one of the problems that we said is the problem that blockchains can solve? And if not, then this is not a good match and this is not a good solution.
Okay. How important in general is it to understand coding when you want to learn about developing applications on blockchains?
So I believe more important than understanding the code behind the blockchain is understanding the processes of what's happening behind a blockchain and how they lend themselves into the effects that the blockchain has. So the most important thing is understanding what makes the blockchain special. What is it that the blockchain is actually doing? And then the second layer of that, which gets a little bit technical, is understanding how the blockchain is essentially doing what it's doing. So that means understanding processes like consensus protocols, understanding things like proof of work, for instance, understanding crypto economics and how game theory comes into play to make this economic system that's essentially decentralized, right? So more than really going in the lines of code of how Bitcoin works, understanding these processes is much more important. And so when it comes to actually developing on the blockchain, so writing smart contracts and things like that, you're not really dealing with the source code of the blockchain, right? So you're just there. It's basically essentially smart contracts are written primarily in a language called Solidity. And that's essentially like any other programming language, and it has its own rules. And programming on the blockchain has its own limitations and rules, which you have to be familiar with. But for that, you don't need to know the source code of Ethereum.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. The reason why I ask that is just yesterday I had a conversation with somebody who puts together kind of a class on Bitcoin programming. Mm-hmm. And he said it's super important that people know that people are developers. They must be software developers. Otherwise, it will be, you know, not interesting for them because they won't be able to follow the class. But he said one of the main challenges is even for very senior developers, if they don't understand what you just mentioned, you know, if they don't understand how blockchains work and how incentives work on blockchains, then it can be very, very hard even for them.
Yeah. So to that point, I mean, one of my personal challenges when I joined this industry essentially was that I am a developer. So I worked as a software engineer in the fintech company for the past 3 years before I started up BlockGeeks. But I don't come from a technical background. So I'm a self-taught developer, the same as a lot of our students at BlockGeeks, somebody who basically wanted to do a career shift. So I attended some sort of a bootcamp, learned basic skills about how to code, and then started working. And so I wasn't a big, strong, I didn't have a strong computer science background. And so coming into this field, that was one of my challenges because I felt like the information being presented was very esoteric and it was very guarded in the sense that a lot of people in the industry had the same exact assumption that if you're not a senior software engineer, you shouldn't even be involved in this field. You shouldn't even think about the blockchain. And to me, when I actually understood what the blockchain was, I felt like this is the biggest hypocrisy because blockchains need to be adopted by everybody. Hmm. And the fact that the information and knowledge about how they work, which should be common knowledge for everyone, is being so, you know, guarded with this like technical jargon and just, you know, complication that makes it very difficult to understand. That was something that I felt very passionate about. I felt very passionate about changing because it made it very difficult for me to learn these things when I was starting out. So that's a lot of what we're trying to do at BlockGeeks, to say, you don't need to know all the intricate details, but understanding the big picture isn't as hard as it's been made to seem.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. What kind of resources were those that were accessible that everybody grouped around and said, here, this is the Holy Grail. That's very difficult to understand.
So it wasn't necessarily like in a silo or exclusive in that, but it was what I mean by esoteric is that the way that it is written assumes a lot of technical pre-knowledge. So even if you guys look at, you know, I mean, the Bitcoin white paper is a classic piece of writing. So, you know, as complicated as it is, it's the first classic piece of writing. But even any kind of writing in the Ethereum world or any kind of writing about governance or, you know, even processes, or even understanding cryptography. Like that was one of the main things that for me was the biggest struggle, because I wanted to understand what public key cryptography was, and everything that I went to look at just dove into the deep mathematics from sentence one. And so it lost me right away. And so it took me so long to understand, okay, I don't need to know the math. I just need to know what's happening. Right. And so basically what ended up happening is it actually inspired me to start my own blog called Cryptography for Dummies, which basically does what I was hoping to find myself, which was explaining what cryptography is just in layman's terms, understanding what it does and how it works without having to dive into the mathematics. And I think making information accessible like that, allowing people to not, because what happens is when you start with the hard mathematics on line one, you've lost everybody. You know, you basically, people are now scared of even interacting with this information. They're either bored or they're, you know, unengaged, right? But if you actually give them, if you actually show them why this information is relevant to them, how it can help them, how the blockchain is important in their daily lives, and show them, you know, the interesting parts about it, the interdisciplinary parts of economics and math and computer science all coming together to basically simulate kind of a human economy, right? So like those things were all like amazing to me. And I felt like that's so important for everybody to see that and to not be afraid of.
I mean, to kind of wrap up what you just said there, I mean, you said there was a lot of information out there, but it quickly became very, very difficult and very technical. It was intimidating in a sense, right? And so you focused on distilling the essence of what really matters and made that easier accessible.
Yes, absolutely. Beautifully put, yeah.
But what were certain, you know, tools that you used to do that?
So one book that really, really helped me, and I think it just changed how I looked at blockchain and my understanding, was called Mastering Bitcoin by Andreas Antonopoulos. And I remember reading this book and just felt like this is exactly what we need, because it was completely like, it wasn't glossing over information in the sense that it was hiding away the abstract, it was hiding away the complexity or making it too simple. It was still talking about all those things that it needed to talk about, and it was getting technical in some parts, but it was so well written and it was so informative and approachable that I felt like after reading this book, I just understood everything about what, like the basics of what a blockchain was. So this book was written specifically about Bitcoin. So there was some specific information relating to Bitcoin, but a lot of fundamental processes of how consensus protocols work, how the different nodes are connected to each other, what happens, you know, so all of these things, it just allowed me to visualize the full process. For me to visualize from the moment that I send Bitcoin from my account to somebody else, what is happening? What are all the steps that are going on? And being able to see that through that book just really took my knowledge to the next level. And I always recommend it to anybody who's starting out as well. It's a great book to have. And they're actually with Gavin Wood and Andreas actually just launched Mastering Ethereum as well, which I'm really excited to read. So I think that's a great book series.
Yeah. Definitely. And we'll put the links in the description to both of these books. You already said who is taking the class. You know, you said some are developers, others are lawyers, then you have business people. But what about, you know, age bracket? Is it more students or more people who are already, you know, working and advanced in their career? Or what's the demographic?
So we actually have a wide range. It's exciting. So typically I would say most of our students are in the 30s to 40s range. So there are business professionals or developers or whatever the profession may be, but there are people who've been in the workforce for quite a number of years, and they're mostly interested in somehow leveraging blockchain technology, either in their own business or learning about it and making a career switch. But having said that, we also have some outliers. So we actually had one young girl who's 15 years old, and she's actually based in Toronto as well, and she's 15. And so she took our courses and attended our live webinars, and then she actually built a genome project on the blockchain that helps track genome samples. And it was really, really exciting to see somebody so young being invested in this technology and kind of, you know, taking the lead and being interested from such a young age. So that was really inspiring to see. And we also have a few students every cohort that are, you know, much older. You know, we had one guy who was in my last cohort who was like 63 and basically retired, but he's just interested in new technology. And he's like, I keep hearing about this Bitcoin and I want to find out what it is. So just seeing people who at every stage of their life, they're curious is also interesting.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's excellent. Who do you think currently in your view or experience, who is missing or underrepresented when you look at the people taking the class?
Definitely women. We have almost okay. No women. Yeah. So the girl that I mentioned, Ananya, she's a 15-year-old. She was a girl. But I believe that's probably, one of the only girls we've had in the program. So it's overwhelming.
Wow. How many people have taken the program?
Thousands.
Out of 1,000 is one. That's insane.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a few more, but definitely it's a very, I would say 90-10.
Okay. Well, that's the story of tech. It seems.
Unfortunately. And I believe within tech, even blockchain is even more so inaccessible to women. And from my experience in the industry, I don't think it's necessarily because it's a boys club. Like, I haven't found that myself being, in fact, I feel like people are very appreciative of the fact that you're a woman and you're interested in this stuff. So I've had a little bit of a reverse experience, but I think the main reason again is that the information is just so wrapped up in, you know, dry technical information that it's not appealing to a lot of women, or a lot of women don't think that, you know, they think that it's boring or it's math heavy or this or that. So the same way that a lot of women in general, maybe like even when they're in school or whatever, are somehow dissuaded from pursuing technology or finding technology interesting. You know, they're always guided towards more creative, more arts, which is great as well. But at least for me personally, I found that I was always somehow disinterested in mathematics and technology. And yet when I, you know, stumbled upon the actual field and got to learn what it's actually about, I found it quite interesting. So then I always went back and I thought, how did I not think that this was interesting? Or how was this information kept from me? Or so that's one of my questions as well. When I think about why there aren't more women involved in tech, I believe that's a deeper problem. And it starts with education rather than just, you know, the environment of being a boys club, which is true as well, but maybe not as deeply rooted.
Interesting. But how, I mean, in general, how do you convince people that they need to know about blockchain technology?
I think for me, I mean, I don't know if I can convince people about wanting to learn about stuff, but everyone has to find their own way, I guess.
Well, but it's just what you mentioned before, right? You said math is interesting, but, you know, how do you get people excited about it, to want to learn it?
What got me excited about it when I was kind of finding out what this is essentially what I try to expound to other people as well, right? So for me, it was this idea that, one, this is this essential system that within the system, there is no authority, right? So you essentially, as the individual, have absolute control over your own life. And there's no system or government or entity that can exert any kind of control over you. And so for me, coming from a country like Iran, where, you know, so much of the government controls so much, and the economy is ruined because of the country's relationship with the United States, and people are suffering. And not only that, but we have revolutions every 20 years or something, you know, and it never works. There's always one regime continued by another regime, continued by another regime, and they're all just as bad. And to see that, okay, up till this point, we had no choice but to rely on these centralized systems because that was the only way we could get our processes to work. It was the only way they could stand in the middle of our transactions and mitigate those transactions and allow a society to function. But the fact that we can essentially create a mechanical version of that where it is just run mechanically and there's no person there who can be corrupted, there's no person there who has perverse incentives, there's no person there who can take advantage of the other people. And the fact that we have that option to use this system now as an alternative instead of the old centralized systems that we had to rely on, to me, it just signifies a new kind of revolution. It says, well, now we can actually we don't need to go out on the streets and die anymore. We can just stop using your systems. And if we don't use your systems will collapse. And so to me, being able to have that much power as an individual was just such a profound idea. And I felt like that's why every single person needs to understand what blockchain is and how it can be useful for them.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's excellent. What you just mentioned there is it's basically a story of empowerment, mm-hmm. right? So you take a technology and you look for its essence, you find it empowers people and, mm-hmm. and then, you know, you give them that tool. And I think that's a very strong, you know, that's a very convincing argument, right? Know about how you can build your own future and take charge of it. I think that's super, super strong. What are other narratives that you think work, you know, that bring across what blockchains can do or what, you know, token economics can do and how they can improve the future?
That's a good question. So the way that I usually think about where blockchains can be helpful or essentially what types of solutions require blockchain, I think about three, or at least I've been able to distill it down to three different use cases. So the first use case is essentially the one that I mentioned to you. So being able to cut out these centralized institutions or middlemen in transactions and allowing people to transact directly. So, and then through that, being able to have sovereign control over yourself because you don't need to rely on systems anymore, essentially. So that was the first essentially narrative or use case. The second one would be if you want to reprogram incentives. So one example that comes to mind in this regard is the example of fake news. So the reason that fake news is happening right now is because of perverse incentives when it comes to sharing news stories through social media or through any kind of online platform. So the value is placed on how many clicks your article gets, because advertisers will pay you to put their ads on your page if your page gets a lot of clicks. So because of this, people who are hosting articles are now incentivized to write, you know, catchy titles that grab people's attentions and incentivize them to click rather than being accurate or telling the truth, right? So now, so essentially, because there's money in advertising and advertisers pay these articles who are essentially creating clickbait articles, you're getting misinformation spread around. So you're getting this essentially fake news. So what the blockchain system can do, and a company called Civil with Consensus is actually doing this right now, is reprogramming these kinds of incentives so that instead of people being rewarded for people clicking on their articles, people are essentially rewarded for fact-checking articles or publishing true articles. So the way that Civil does it essentially is they, in their newsrooms, they allow people to stake money against a particular article, and then fact checkers will go and they will try to essentially like find flaws in articles to be able to win money. So essentially incentivizes everybody to go and fact check all these articles and make sure that everything is accurate. And so you're not doing this by kind of forcing people to, you know, post true articles or banning them or kind of trying to limit them in this way, but you're just changing the structure of the game. You're reprogramming the way the system works so that people acting in their own self-interest, the way that people naturally act, will perform something that's good for the entire network. And it's good for the entire, or they perform what you want them to perform, which is exactly one of the, you know, which is the basis of crypto economics. And it's what was so revolutionary about Bitcoin, and is that you actually got the network to do on their own without any kind of policing the correct behavior or the good behavior, essentially. So that's essentially the second kind of narrative when it comes to blockchains. And then the third narrative would be when it comes to interacting, and this is more relevant in the private sector and with multinational corporations, specifically, you know, retailers, supply chain and stuff like that, where when you're working or even with banking, when it comes to KYC and anti-money laundering laws and things like that. And so it means when you're interacting with multiple organizations, so multi-organization transactions, you're allowing them to be much more transparent, and you're allowing, so instead of having a bunch of different databases that are essentially siloed and incomplete, and as soon as a piece of information comes into your database, you just know what is happening while it's there. And then once it leaves your database, you don't really know what's happening anymore. And you end up having this broken process where none of the members know really the full history of a particular item, you're essentially stopping that with a blockchain because all these members now have a shared ledger, shared database, and shared processes. So there's great transparency and there's much greater speed, and as well as provenance and tracking a particular item, which is super useful when it comes to things like supply chain and being able to track, for example, you know, a piece of lettuce, you know, that has Ebola in it or something, you know, and you're able to track that exact lettuce and recall it instead of having to recall everything.
Yeah. Cool. That's an excellent summary there too. I think, don't you have a film background or something?
Yes. Yeah.
Because you have all these visual metaphors, you know, that are really, really good. So.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. So I come from a rather creative background. So it was interesting to make the switch to tech, but I feel like right now what I'm doing at Blockbeats is kind of the best of both worlds because I still get to be involved in the tech world, but I also get to use some of what I love, which is telling stories and making people excited about cool stuff.
Yeah, that's excellent. Was there a specific event, you know, that showed you that more education about this space is important?
So when I first learned about blockchain, I was just kind of, I think what happened is I randomly stumbled upon some meetup here in Toronto and I walked in and it was a very, so this is what I'm talking about when it's like a very essentially uninviting environment to somebody who's not familiar with it. So I walked into this meetup and it was super technical. People were, you know, discussing bits of code within the Ethereum, you know, within Web3 and like talking about all that kind of stuff. And I just remember just not even understanding one word of anything that they were saying. So I was kind of dejected and I was walking out the door. And as I was walking out, somebody was at the door and he basically said, "Hey, some of us are going to grab a drink. Do you want to come?" And I said, "Sure, why not?" Went to grab a drink with them. And while I was there, I was like, "What is this blockchain? Why do people care?" And they just explained to me in layman's terms what decentralization was and what the blockchain was actually doing. And I felt like that's so crazy because I've heard about blockchain and Bitcoin for like 3-4 years at this point. And nowhere does it say this basic sentence about the fact that it just enables people to have decentralized systems, you know? And so, or even going to find that it's buried under so much other jargon and other things like that where, you know, whereas I feel like it should be the headline. It should be the thing that draws everybody in so you understand.
Yeah, and exactly. I think that's... Well, it's not exactly clickbait, is it?
Yeah, exactly. With the part where it should be clickbait. But what I just find with any kind of, not just technology, but just any kind of teaching or learning or whatever you want to call it, is what people care about is... Like they're every time when someone's trying to learn something, they're trying to apply it to their own life. They're asking, "Why should I care about this? Why is this information important?" And so when you're trying to talk about the blockchain, instead of diving into, you know, from step one, diving into what proof of work is and like going into the details of that consensus algorithm, you have to grab people with, this is what this technology does. This is its implication. This is how it can change your life. You know, and once people understand that and they're hooked into that vision, now they're interested in learning about the intricacies of it and the details. But, and I find that that was one of the biggest challenges in this space is that they always started with the super technical, you know, minutia without actually looking at without ever explaining what it actually was meant to do.
Yeah.
So it was really hard for somebody new to kind of grasp that.
Why is that the case, you think?
I think probably, I have two beliefs. So I think what I just described to you is not just true in the context of blockchains. I think it's true in the context of any kind of system or industry that governs our lives. So I definitely noticed this in the context of law, in the context of finance, other technology as well, where, you know, for example, if I want to learn about finance, if I try to go on the internet and find out what a future is, it's so difficult. Like everything that you want to read about it is so complicated and convoluted. And it's so difficult for a simple person to even understand something as basic as how money works in their country. I just remember this because I had to go learn this when I was trying to learn economics so I could teach at Blockbeats. And I found it so confusing and confounding. And the same with law as well, where you just find a lot of like legal, you know, jargon and documents and stuff like that, which are made in a weird way to confuse people and keep them out so that they don't start questioning those systems, or they don't start engaging with them. And so to me, I feel like in this sense, it's just a way to take power away from people, right? Because if you don't understand something, you're not going to question it. You're not going to engage with it. And so now you're willing to relinquish the control of it to somebody else. So to me, that's essentially, and they call it techno-strategic discourse, where the language is made deliberately difficult to keep the majority of people out and only allow a very limited number of people to understand and engage with that technology and essentially control it. And we see that in the blockchain world as well, where a lot of the people who are essentially designing these systems and who are essentially decision makers of the blockchain governments, if you want to call them, like the Ethereum world and the Bitcoin world, are really highly technical developers. And so when they interact with each other and when they communicate with each other, it really is hard as somebody who's not a part of that world to be able to interact with them. And so because you're not at that level and you don't have the same understanding, now your voice isn't being heard in, you know, in the scheme of what they're doing. But in the context of blockchain, though, I don't think that it was as harshly what I'm saying, because these old systems of finance and law have been around for so many years, hundreds of years, right? So in the context of blockchain, I think it was just mostly happenstance, because the Bitcoin white paper first came out within very kind of small cryptography and like cypherpunk communities. And so the people who kind of championed it and were interested in it were just from that background. And so that was what they were interested in, was like the technology and was the, you know, the cryptography and just, you know, the technical side of it so much. And so the more they were talking about it and expressing it and writing about it, they were focused on that part. And so I think now it's the job of people like me who are coming from the other side to come and say, okay, there's a technical side, and if you're interested in it, you can go learn it. But if you're not a technical person, this is still for you. And this can still help your life. And this is how.
Let's take a quick break for a message from our sponsors. 8Grade is a media production company with a special focus on telling engaging stories about new technologies and the future. Companies work with 8Grade to turn relatively dry content, such as scientific articles, business white papers, or corporate narratives, into engaging stories with films, interviews, podcasts, and other media that reach people on social channels and offline. To contact 8Grade and learn more about making an impact with story-driven media, visit 8gr8.com. So, I mean, how do you make that leap, you know, from getting somebody fired up to then not lose interest to, you know, see it through, to learn more?
That's a really good question. And it's one of the challenges we're trying really hard to solve at BlockGeeks. So what we've been able to do at BlockGeeks is we basically do, once we get somebody who's interested in learning about, you know, the technology and everything, we try to, so as much as we can, we try to ease them into the information. So two techniques that I found are really useful are, one, just like divulging a little bit of information at a time and then doing lots of reviews. So for every lesson, you're essentially reviewing a lot of what the previous lesson was as well, because the concepts are very challenging and they do take a couple of renditions for it to actually seep into your mind, right? So we actually found that that was really useful. And one of the most important things about getting people to not lose interest is that at every step of the way, they have to feel like they get it and it's easy. You know, like, oh, that's not so bad. I understand this. It's okay. And so the challenge for us has been to not just dive too quickly off the deep end and move into something super technical quickly where we lose them. So if we're just building a little bit of information each time, and one of the challenges of that becomes, when I was just starting out and learning about blockchain myself, that was easier for me to do, because as I was learning information, I was sharing it with people. And so because we were on the same plane, I felt like they could understand and connect with that information a lot better. But what ends up happening is, once you're in the industry for a while, a lot of that information you start taking for granted, because you're just surrounded by that world so much that all of that information, you feel like it becomes common sense or it becomes common knowledge. And so at that point, it becomes a little bit more challenging to get back into that mindset of the beginner and try to understand what questions are they having right now? What are their issues? And how do you solve these little knots for them? And just give them a little bit of information just to solve the question they have, allow them to ask the next question, and then, you know, provide that little bit of answer. And so going back to the previous point, we were talking about, you know, why so much of the information in the blockchain world is kind of super esoteric and not accessible is that I think because these people who started this essentially industry were super technical, you know, cypherpunks, cryptographers, and things like that, to them, speaking in those terms was like common sense. That was their common way of talking. So, you know, for them, it was hard for them because they were such masters in that field and they were so technical. It was so hard for them to think about what somebody who doesn't understand this stuff might think.
Interesting. You know, I noticed this with some writers, with some podcasters who may have started quite early to report about the space and who became more and more expert at this and in the process became less and less accessible, you know, to maybe new audiences.
Yeah. So, I mean, going back to the issue you were talking about with the podcast is that I feel like now there's like a little bit of a blockchain bubble where as long as you live inside this bubble, you feel like you see blockchain everywhere. So for me, I feel like I, you know, because of my work and everything, and you're listening to all these podcasts and everything like that. So you're kind of surrounded by this all the time. And so you think it's everywhere, but it was super interesting to me because as soon as I stepped out, you know, talking to somebody who's not in this field outside of our little bubble, people still have no idea what this is. So to the point where I just tell people I'm a computer programmer because nobody understands what I actually do. So there's no point to even go and talk about it. So I think the point is because there's a little bit of a sense of community, people are, you know, heartened by that. But the danger of that is to think, just to live in that bubble and to think that, you know, we've made it and the blockchain is everywhere because we were talking about it all the time. But it's, you're talking about it in the context of this like 500 people who are in the blockchain community, not the rest of the world who still really doesn't know what's going on or anything about it.
Yeah, exactly. But I think, I mean, I second that with one reservation, which is it's very easy then to slip into some kind of marketing role. You know,
right.
You don't want to be a salesperson.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And it's just, I think it's still important to maintain, you know, a certain grounding and maybe a certain, I mean, it's just important to keep a, you know, to differentiate from just plain old marketing and rallying up people to do something. Information.
I've definitely seen a lot of that in this industry as well. I think especially in the hype that was happening this time last year, we got a lot of people who maybe didn't know so much about what the actuality of blockchain, what it is, and just kind of jumping on the bandwagon and just, you know, trying to make a quick buck or, you know, things like that. And that's definitely unfortunate, but it's a reality that's a part of, but like, people like that will always exist and will always try to capitalize on whatever the next big thing is. But the question for me, or, you know, the rather test for me is I try not to think of it in terms of like selling or not selling, because I think if even like, if you think about selling in general, it's the way that I think about it is if what you're offering is valuable to somebody, then that's like a mutual benefit. So like, if I'm trying to sell something that I know is not good, and I'm basically trying to use like trickery or whatever to try to make a buck or to market it to my own advantage, when I don't believe in what it offers, that's a different story. But if you're at the same time passionate about something and you're sharing it with everybody, it's up to them to decide if they want to engage with it or not. But you being passionate and like talking about that shouldn't be something that you're afraid to do.
I agree with you. Do you need to be critical as well and passionate at the same time?
What do you mean by this?
Well, I mean, the reason I ask is because when I published my film, you know, I got attacked from several sides who said, you're too optimistic. You know, people will jump into this and lose a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, maybe I should have interviewed more critics, you know, who are a little bit more reserved about what blockchains can do. But then again, they weren't there, you know, they were just ranting critics who were against everything. And so it was just wasn't a measured discourse. I couldn't have done that. But it showed me that it's kind of, you know, when you do something and 500,000 people watch it, it has an impact.
For sure, yeah.
And so how to also be responsible, you know, there's kind of a line there.
That's very true. And I think where it can get misconstrued is when people, you know, start thinking that you're trying to advertise people buying cryptocurrencies, you know, because especially because so much of what people associate the blockchain with is cryptocurrencies. So when you're talking about, you know, blockchain, so that someone who's not really well informed might say like, oh, I invested in this crypto and it went down and I lost all my money and it's all a scam, you know, and now you're telling people to go invest in this thing. So I think that's definitely a challenge. And we as educators, you know, we have to be very careful about kind of that distinction in the language that we use. And I think at the same time, you're absolutely right. I mean, there are dissenters in the blockchain world as well, who are academics and stuff like that. Like, some of them are on Twitter. And I think it's good to have a balanced mix of people who agree with you and people who disagree with you, just because otherwise you again might go into this thing of just living in this bubble and kind of getting a lot of confirmation bias, right?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, everyone around you agrees with what you're saying, so it must be right. And then you're just kind of not listening to, and not necessarily not listening to on purpose, but just because you're surrounded by, you know, and I think a lot of like our social media fosters that a little bit, right? Because you just follow the people that you agree with, and then your news feed is just with their thoughts and comments. And so you just live in this bubble. So that's kind of what happened with the Trump presidency, right? Where none of the people who were liberals thought that it was possible because they were just surrounded by others like them who didn't believe it. But, you know, then there's this whole other world out there of people who are completely not like you, but you're siloed off from them. So I think it's important to, yeah, definitely like seek out some of those opinions and try to see, you know, can I counter this? Or if it's a real limitation, then, you know, what does this mean? Is there a way around it? Or, you know, because I think you have to always be challenging your own beliefs as well, which is not super easy to do.
It's not super easy to do, especially if you are so convinced that it's the right thing. But what do you think is one of the misunderstandings about blockchain technology that maybe people have?
Good question. So I would say, rather than a misunderstanding, it might just be a lack of understanding. So in most of my experience with people, mostly they don't know anything about the blockchain. So it's not really at the point where, you know, people are kind of, you know, they have formed their own opinions, and then maybe they're missing a point or two, or they're not sure about a certain thing. So I would say that majority of people that I've interacted with know close to zero, almost nothing about blockchain. So they don't know the difference between Bitcoin and blockchain. They think it's the same thing, or they don't know the difference between the different kinds of cryptocurrencies. They don't know, they're not familiar at all with the concept of decentralization. They just think Bitcoin is like digital money. Think like very basic level issues. And then even within the industry, when you start entering it a little bit, and, you know, people who, you know, at least say that they know more about things, or, you know, they're more involved, you start to see a lot of people just trying to shoehorn any kind of application that exists right now in our world into a blockchain solution, and just kind of put a blockchain stamp on it and say, we got a token for this, you know, and not really understanding that the business model is changing. So I would say like, that's probably the biggest misunderstanding about the blockchain, where it's not just a technology, it's a paradigm shift in how our institutions will operate and how we will conduct business. So the way that business will conduct will be different, right? So I find a lot of companies, or, you know, startups or whatever, they're like, oh, we're going to create this blockchain company and we're going to have this token and it's going to do this thing. And they don't understand the economics of how to make that token actually useful. And they don't understand how to monetize their business. So because they're basically taking an idea that exists and is working perfectly fine with the current system that we have, and then they're just trying to like redo it as a blockchain idea. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Or they think in old terms, you know. I mean, mm-hmm. I read something, or I think it was some kind of newspaper that tried to explain how mining works in Bitcoin. And it said mm-hmm. the miners are compensated somehow, you know, in cryptocurrency. And it sounded like somebody would pay them to do a job.
So
it's, there must be like an employer almost hiring those people to mine, like in a real mine, right? And so I think this is super hard for people to wrap their heads around these new economic models.
That is so true, yeah.
So I'm wondering, you know, do you have any metaphors, you know, that you use that you find work well to bring across that point?
Yeah, so I guess the biggest, like kind of an obvious metaphor, really, but kind of the biggest one is kind of looking at the difference between how business was conducted before the internet age and how business is conducted now. And not just business, but the kinds of ways we interact with each other, right? So even a lot of, you know, when the internet was coming out in the 90s, people were kind of, you know, some people, like, there's actually clips of it, right? Where, you know, some like the lady in the 90s talk show is talking about, like, you know, what is this internet thing? I don't even know. We don't even need to use it. What is this like at symbol for an email? It's just for people to like talk to each other on the computer, but I don't want to do that. So I feel like we're exactly at that point right now where the technology itself is so young that it hasn't developed to the point where real applications can be built on it. And so as a result of that, a lot of the real actual use cases of what a blockchain application will be, or where blockchains will become super widespread, essentially hasn't been thought up yet. So the same way that if you think about in the 90s, nobody was thinking about Google or Facebook, or like even if they were thinking about it, it was so small that, you know, it was just a seedling of an idea, and the infrastructure of the internet wasn't at the point to be able to support that, right? So I believe we're kind of in the same place where right now the way that, you know, e-commerce is done, the way that we share information, the way that we communicate with each other, all of these things, like the internet has essentially dominated all of this, right? To the point where somebody thinking about it in 1992 couldn't have even imagined that these applications actually exist. And so much of business is being done online, to the point where we actually have abandoned malls in the United States right now, where people just are all buying stuff online. So people aren't going to the malls. So that metaphor really works for me. And I think it helps me kind of be patient and understand that, you know, a lot of, you know, just with the same way that when the internet first came out, you know, to public use in the 90s, there were so many terrible websites that didn't make any sense and were broken. And there were so many scams and things like that. And all of those had to kind of die. And then when the technology was building up and becoming a little bit more robust, real applications started to take hold and real use cases that nobody else had thought of before. And I think that's essentially where we're headed with the blockchain in the next 5 to 10 years, where within, you know, the next 5 years, we're going to see a lot of focus on the actual building of the infrastructure, allowing, you know, inter-blockchain solutions to allow like larger applications to run on the blockchain, allowing faster transactions to make it more scalable for mass use. And so by the time we get to where the technology is actually able to handle mass adoption, then we're going to see applications being built on this where right now we can't even imagine what that application is or what that use case is. And in 5 to 10 years, we're going to see, oh man, now this kind of business is done entirely on the blockchain, or this kind of voting is done entirely on the blockchain, and it's completely, or this kind of whatever, fill in the blanks, is done completely on the blockchain, and it's not what we expected.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's super interesting, and it's somewhat similar, you know, to the self-driving cars, you know, who rely on Google Maps, and Google Maps was only possible because of Google, and Google was only possible because of the internet. And so who would have thought, you know, of self-driving cars that have maps that are just available in the 90s? Right. I mean, that would have been a big stretch. Yeah, it'll be interesting. Neelu, with all this knowledge, right? I mean, you know coding, you know the token economics, you see business models. Did you ever think about, you know, raising money in an ICO and launching your own token or currency?
No, I didn't think about that. Because I don't know. I mean, for me, that was never what excited me about it. I wasn't interested. I mean, everyone likes money. Like, I'm not going to say that I'm completely altruistic, but I mean, that wasn't what interested me about blockchains anyway. So for me, I just feel like being able to help spread the word and educate people and like getting everybody to actually learn about this and use it is going to be way more effective in the long run than any kind of ICO or single application that I can do. Because it's, like I said, at this point, the actual infrastructure of a blockchain is not robust enough to support an application that can be widely used by a lot of people. So unless I want to make some sort of very niche application, or if I want to, you know, just essentially do like an ICO scam where I raise a bunch of money and then kind of run, it doesn't really make a lot of sense. I think it's more valuable to just get more people to understand what a blockchain is and get more people to want to use it, to want to understand cryptocurrencies, and to just remove that barrier to entry so that when the technology is more robust, we have essentially like an army of people who are ready to build and help. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool. That's excellent. Do you have, in your work or in your life, do you have any role models?
That's a good question. I would definitely say my boss at BlockX is a role model of mine. So Amir Rozic, he's the CEO of BlockX. And he's a great businessman. And so I definitely admire him for that. But beyond that, I would say I just admire him because, you know, working with him so closely, I'm seeing, you know, you always have this misconception or like this perception that, you know, business is cutthroat and, you know, the nice guy finishes last and kind of these kinds of like proverbs or whatever that you want to say, where, you know, being successful a lot of times is equated with kind of doing shady things or not being a good person or not being, or not having morality. And one thing that I found with working with Amir, and not just Amir, but with a lot of the people in the blockchain space, is that they value so much, you know, morality and just being good people and helping each other and doing right by each other. And to be able to see that you can still be a successful businessman and not, you know, have to essentially sell your soul to do it, very inspiring. And it makes me think that it's possible to be successful and at the same time, a good person.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. That's excellent. I mean, if you had, you mentioned a lot of like the good qualities that people should have, right, to do business in this space and maybe in other space, in other business areas as well. But next to a deep understanding, right, of the technology, of the economics behind it, and, you know, the coding skills to actually transform the knowledge into a product that can make a difference, what do you think are characteristics that people need to be successful in business in the future?
I think one of the main characteristics that people, actually, I would say two things that people need to have to be able to be successful in the future with the way the business is going. The first one is the ability to learn quickly. So because things are going to change so quick, the industry, because even if, as we're looking, you know, before industrial revolutions happened every 100 years, you know, you had the railroad, then you had the factories, and then now you had the personal computer and then the internet and then mobile and now blockchain. And it's just happening. That succession between these revolutions is happening faster and faster and exponentially faster rate. So as somebody who wants to succeed in business, you need to be able to be comfortable with, you know, new information that you don't understand, that you don't know. You need to be comfortable with the unknown. And you need to be able to, you know, learn different things quickly. And one of the things that I'm noticing specifically in the blockchain industry, and I believe it'll bleed into other industries as well, is this, is having an interdisciplinary mindset where you're taking in pieces of information from different industries and you're putting that together and you're combining that in new ways to create new solutions. So if you actually look at what the blockchain itself is a perfect example of that. So it basically took, you know, principles and doctrines from game theory and economics, combined them with, you know, advanced cryptography and mathematics in a creative way to create an entirely new system. And so I think this kind of mindset and this kind of thinking, instead of, you know, doing a deep dive, for example, in one field and then just spending your entire life learning the minutia of that, it makes a lot more sense to be a generalist and to know a little bit about a lot of different things and see how you can put all that information together.
How would you go about learning this kind of thinking?
I really believe in a growth mindset. So I think whatever limitation you think you have, you're putting it on yourself. So if you, you know, I was reading this book called The Efficient Engineer, or Effective Engineer, sorry, The Effective Engineer. And it's a really great book. I highly recommend it. And it just talks about like work practices of effective engineers, essentially, or how to be an effective engineer. And one of the chapters was talking about the study that they did in an English class where, in like a Chinese university, where they essentially asked all the students, you know, if they believed they could learn English or they couldn't, or how easy it was for them to learn English or something. And the ones who essentially put their hand up and said, oh, it's not hard for me to learn, or I can learn anything, or I have a growth mindset, were able to learn that language way faster than the ones who essentially believed that learning was an innate quality and that they couldn't learn English or something. So I think it's really important to note, whatever you think that you can do is what you can do. So if you think that this is my personality or this is my writing, learning style, and I can't learn, then you will prove that and you won't be able to learn. But if you believe that, you know, everything is a skill, we are, you know, and you can learn and grow and continue learning and changing your styles, then you can do that as well.
What skill are you currently acquiring in that sense?
That's a good point. I think right now what I'm focusing on is public speaking.
You're great already, so I think you're quite far ahead there.
I've had a little bit of practice because of my work at Blockix, but one of the things that I'm really interested in is kind of taking my speaking to the next level, where I can be much more concise in the way that I speak. So, you know, using a lot less filler words, and not beating around the bush as much when I'm trying to explain something, and just to be able to explain it in as few words as possible, because I find that that's much more effective than, you know, expounding on the same topic over and over again, because you tend to lose people that way.
Nilu, do you think you'll still work with blockchain technology in maybe 5 years?
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, let's see where the industry is. I mean, I don't want to set anything in stone, but I find the technology fascinating, and I think there's a lot of work to be done. So I definitely hope so.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Nilu, where can people find you?
You guys can reach me at Twitter. So my Twitter handle is nravai, so N-R-A-V-A-E-I. And you guys can also read some of the articles that I've written. So my blogs on cryptography and some other blog posts as well at medium.com. So my handle on Medium is Nilu Ravai, so N-I-L-O-O-R-A-V-A-E-I, all one word.
Great. Nilu, this was fantastic. Thanks a lot for taking time.
Yeah, I thought so as well. Thank you so much, Manuel.
Thanks so much for joining us today. More info on our guests and our sponsors is in the show notes of this episode and on the podcast website, theblockchainandus.com. To help people find this podcast, it's important that you download, subscribe, and give it a top rating and review on iTunes or on the podcast platform of your choice. I'm Manuel Staggers, and I thank you very much for listening.